Hour number three, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning, we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, we were discussing the Russell Wilson situation with the Broncos. And look, obviously we get the money side of this, so that's obvious with the contract.
Right.
My question for you is, how did we go from Sean Payton, in my opinion at least, being intrigued enough by Russell Wilson to take this job in Denver to things deteriorating so quickly between the two of them?
Yeah. Was he though? Was he really
he may
that
not have
intrigued
been.
By Russell Wilson? Talking about this last night with a few people, making a lot of calls on this story, sort of getting a feel for how this all came to be. One thing that I think people forget in the Sean Payton scenario, guys, Sean Payton wouldn't have had a job if the Denver Broncos ultimately didn't come to miss out on Jim Harbaugh, reinstate, Sean Payton as their number one candidate. I think people forget that. Sean Payton made the rounds in terms of, job prospects and sort of in the 11th hour in that whole search for Sean Payton and then the NFL looking at him, it started to leak out that, well, hey, you know what? Maybe in this rotation, it's not right. There's not a right fit. Maybe Sean, the job isn't there for Sean Payton that he loves. And to me, what I thought was happening at the time, and I think I'm right on this, was that all of a sudden Sean Payton, this idea that Sean Payton was a shoe-in for an NFL job, wasn't materializing. And there was a chance that Sean Payton was going to be shut out of this rotation, and he was looking at having to go back to TV for another year. And what ended up happening with the Denver Broncos was that they really, ownership, I think, really wanted Jim Harbaugh, and Jim Harbaugh was not reciprocating that pursuit. And really it got down to Sean Payton once again being their number one candidate, because their real number one candidate, Harbaugh, was not going to be, a possibility for the Broncos. So I think that, there was, I don't want to say it was a shotgun marriage between these two sides with Sean Payton and the Broncos, but I think he took what was available at the time. It was a decent job, but there was an element of, hey, a lot can go wrong here in that first year. And if you talk to people inside the Broncos, there was a hopefulness about how the marriage would ultimately work out. But when you ask them, or I guess just study what could be the downside here, the downside was, Russ won't be the right fit for Sean Payton. George Payton, the general manager, could ultimately be fired in, a year from now. And I'm talking about, when he was hired. And there could be an element of a reboot that happens with Sean Payton. I think all that's kind of come to fruition. Now, we don't know what's going to happen with George Payton, the general manager there, but I think this at least raises the specter of, Russell Wilson might be the first one to go here. George Payton, the general manager, could be next. And the downside of Sean Payton coming into the Broncos franchise and the reboot happening has really been what's ultimately materialized here. And, I'll just real quick, I'll tell you, Payton went through 15 years in the New Orleans Saints franchise of having a player in Drew Brees who knew his offense so well, operated it exactly the way that, Sean Payton expected in terms of having the knowledge of it, carrying it out, knowing like, look, the schemes, the checks, the multitude of different things that have to happen on a Sunday, I know what those are. When I go out there, I'm going to do it the way that this was designed. That was a luxury that Peyton had with Drew Brees. And Drew Brees used to run over younger quarterbacks that would come into the franchise because they couldn't keep up with the detail and really level of just information that went in with this install. And that was a luxury that Peyton enjoyed for 15 years. Russell Wilson's not the same guy. Like, he had an A-plus student for 15 years. Russell Wilson is a C-plus student when it comes to carrying out the exact nuances of what this offense has to be. And I think that's where some of the frustration has come for Peyton over the course of the season. Doesn't mean Russell Wilson's a bad player. It just means it's a really, really bad fit, I think, for Peyton. But it was one that I think he knew he was getting into, but he didn't have other options on the table when he ultimately took the Broncos job.
Okay, so a couple of quick follow-ups. One, what's Denver going to do at quarterback? Right. Okay, three quick follow-ups. What's Denver going to do? How much is $85 million in dead money going to hurt them over 2 years? And then also, what's the interest in Russ now? I mean, my perception of him has changed a lot, not for the better, you know, since he left Seattle. Just
right.
what people saying about him and what we're seeing, but those three.
Okay, throw those at me one at a time.
Okay.
You remember a few things, but let's just go one at a time. Throw me the first one.
What's Denver going to do at QB?
Okay, what's Denver going to do here? All right. Really interesting thing here right now. I think there are people in the franchise that are confused about Russell being a backup with the Broncos right now. And it's weird to have people in the franchise share the same opinion you do when you're like, huh. So you're trying to protect him from injury, and this idea that $37 million could be guaranteed for injury, but you're not deactivating him for the rest of the season. Because, like, it's sort of a half measure. You're like, okay, there's one layer. Jarrett Stidham now is your starter. But see, you're the backup. We see a multitude of starters getting hurt. So realistically, Russ could end up still playing for you right now. Does that make sense? There are people in the franchise that are like, yeah, I don't really get why we're not just deactivating this guy the rest of the season. So first and foremost, it's a little bit of an oddball situation that I think people in the franchise understand the monetary approach to this and not wanting Russ to get hurt, fail a physical in March, and then be on the hook in 2025 for $37 million in salary. So it's oddly disjointed the way they're even handling this right now. But from what I understand, there's no grandiose plan at quarterback. The first thing I asked was when I started to dig into this, okay, well, if you're getting rid of A, there's got to be a B, right? Like, tell me who the B is. It certainly can't be Jarrett Stidham, right? I know he signed the guy to a 2-year, $10 million deal, but that's not really the big plan at the end of the day. And what I got back was a shrug. Like, we don't really know what Sean's plan is right now at quarterback. Financially, what makes sense is if you're going to take a massive salary cap hit, 80 plus million in 2024, if you split it post June 1 and try to spread it over 2 years, the plan has to be, okay, if there's another plan at quarterback, it can't be wildly expensive. It's got to be a cheap option. I think right now there is a thought process that this is Sean's ball. You know, he's the one who's got it. He's the one who's going to make this decision. It's clear he's running the franchise right now. But there's no hard and fast plan in place in terms of what the replacement's going to be for Russell Wilson. But the assumption is probably going to go and get a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, figure out maybe how to move up in the draft. You know, Sean Payton's been a trade-up guy in the draft. And how could that be accomplished to crack the top three players in this draft in terms of the quarterback position? Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, you know, and we're 24 hours, less than 24 hours really into this being public. But I will tell you, inside the franchise, I don't think anybody knows for sure what Sean Payton's plan is at the quarterback position. And that kind of tells you how messy this is right now inside the Broncos. Second question you were asking.
Well, just, I don't care about the dead money. Just Russ. What the heck is up with Russ?
He'll have value, okay? I know people are going to look at this situation and they're going to say, well, geez, you know, last year, it looks like he's fallen off a cliff since he left Seattle. I think the one thing, and again, this is coming from inside the organization, I think they know at this stage what Russ is. They're like, all right, you got to have a good defense. You got to have a good running game. Basically, you have to be built the way that the Seattle Seahawks were when Russ was a viable player for them the last few years of his career in Seattle. And it, you know, it's a, hey, he's a player that, and this is part of why I think Sean Payton really has rejected him. He's a player that's not always going to play in structure for you. He is, for the balance of his career, he was a player that when he would start to get out of structure, he was able, through his athleticism, to make big plays and be viable for the Seattle Seahawks inside what the offensive structure was at the time. As his athleticism has faded, when you talk to people who have really spent a lot of time staring at the tape on Russell Wilson, it's that he's paying more attention to the defense now than he has in past years as a player. And that's because he's lost the edge as an athlete as he's aged. And so he's not looking at the offensive players behind the defense. He's looking at the defensive players in front of his offensive players. And that has started to limit some of the things that he can do as a player. Now, that said, there are a lot of teams that have problems at quarterback right now. And, you know, I think that's what's going to continue to create an opportunity for him. You know, let's see what Washington does with the change over there. You know, we still at this stage, I think we don't know what's going to happen with Justin Fields in Chicago. They're going to have opportunities to make a change. You know, I think Atlanta, I think, is a team that, and this is just looking at the NFC, Atlanta is a team that's got to make a change at quarterback. I think when you get into the AFC, New England, again, what's going to happen there? I tend to believe that Tennessee, you know, with Will Levis, we've talked about this in the past. I would be shocked if you moved away from that plan. But, you know, the Raiders, there's plenty of teams that I think have enough questions at the quarterback position that he's going to have some element of value, although I don't know that he's anything more than a bridge starter in the NFL now. And what's interesting here is people are going to say, well, what about the money? Well, first off, he's going to have to get cut, okay, by the Denver Broncos. Secondly, he has a salary offset in 2024, which means you can pay Russell Wilson the league minimum, which I think for his number of years accrued, it's over $1 million, like $1.2, $1.3 million. That's all you have to pay him, and then Denver picks up the rest of the tab in 2024. So he is a very, very cheap veteran option for a number of teams in 2024. We'll sort out that quarterback position and what the landscape really looks like come January, February, though, before we really know where he could realistically land.
Well, more with Charles Robinson with Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you, continuing our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, Joe Flacco in Cleveland. He's got the Browns to 10-5. He's played four games. Yeah. They've gone 3-1 during that span. It's not been perfect. He's thrown seven picks in those four games, but he's also put up 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. What do you make of what we've seen from Flacco and his resurgence in Cleveland?
Yeah, it's a great story. Something's been kind of hanging around the back of my head over the course of this week, you know, talking to teams about quarterbacks. And Joe asked me a couple weeks ago, it might have even been longer than that. He asked me about Baker Mayfield, and I wrote Mayfield off, and I said, you know, this is it. I don't see him being a starter after the 2023 season. I was wrong about that. And Mayfield has turned out to be a much better player than I imagined with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think he's viable as a long-term piece there. And I bring that up now because, you know, when we talk about kind of good quarterback stories in 2023, there have been a lot of, you know, backups who have gotten opportunities, raised some eyebrows. You know, to me, Mayfield has been – I would think Mayfield would be the sort of the story of the year in terms of guys that have resurrected themselves, if not for Joe Flacco, who was on his couch like 2 months ago. You know, it was over for Flacco 2 months ago. And, you know, the NFL train had moved on without him. He was literally keeping his arm in shape, throwing balls to his kids and his brother of all people. Like, it wasn't like this guy was out on a field, you know, really working it. It seemed like his career was over. And then, you know, the Cleveland Browns, who have played an exquisite season defensively, Jim Schwartz, probably the, I think, a prime candidate for assistant coach of the year. He was the coordinator change they really, really needed. But what, you know, when they started to run into quarterback problems with injuries and Deshaun Watson was lost for the season, what they needed was someone to come in who could put points up. And not, they didn't necessarily need someone who could be perfect, but who could bring some juice to the franchise. And the defense could look across, you know, to the other side of the ball and say, hey, you know what? Okay, it's somebody who's going to make some mistakes, but he's going to score points. Now, we just need to be able to clean up some of the mistakes that he ultimately makes. And, you know, Flacco's now become this great story headed into the postseason for the Cleveland Browns. They're still in play for the number one seed in the AFC. Granted, they need a lot of, you know, kind of wild things to go right for them. But I do think one of the things that the Browns are excited about is this is a guy that over four games has really unlocked. Amari Cooper, the last four games, has been, you know, playing at an all-pro level. David Njoku, the tight end there, has been a guy who's really been unlocked the last four games with Flacco. Now, he's made mistakes, as you said. I mean, he's not been a perfect player. But the way that they're built, and I think the way that sort of the emotion on their team, I think what the defense wanted there was just to have a veteran who was viable, going to come in, sling it. Flacco's been able to do that. He's still amazing. His arm is still, he walked back into the NFL off his couch and probably brought a top five arm into the NFL with him. And, you know, they just, I think the emotion in the franchise is just like, hey, you know what? We got a guy who's going to go out. He's happy to be here. We're all juiced for him. And even though he's going to sideswipe a lot of cars on the way to the destination, we're going to be here to kind of clean that up for him defensively, even with injuries, and it makes us dangerous. I would say the Browns right now, there are two teams that I think you're going to find teams really don't want to face going into the playoffs right now. It's the Rams in the NFC, and I think it's the Browns in the AFC, because I think emotionally you have teams that feel like they're hitting a little bit of a groove now late in December, and they just feel, you know, dangerous coming into these games. They feel like teams that, that feel like they've got a shot here that they didn't necessarily feel they had at midseason. So, yeah, Flacco's been a really, really fun story to follow, and it does have – it's not exactly the same from an age standpoint and an opportunity standpoint, but there is an element of the whole Nick Foles taking the Eagles on a run unexpectedly that year that they won the Super Bowl. I think, you know, Flacco's bringing a little bit of that to the Browns right now.
So Lamar Jackson was my MVP before he took apart the Niners. Now the entire world is – you know, wants to jump course, on the bandwagon.
We're always catching up to you, Joe. We're always catching up to you.
Some things never change.
Exactly. I was the first person to wear parachute pants in 1982. But he's the guy, right? It's got to be Lamar.
It feels that way at this point. And it's, you know, the thing that I think is really remarkable about Lamar is I've never seen a player ever in the, you know, 20 plus years that I've covered the league. I've never seen a player who at every single turn did what he wanted to do and everybody else was wrong. Like the critics, the people who question him were wrong. I mean, you know, when, you know, he's a college football player and a lot of guys get converted to a skill position and he was like, nope, going to be a quarterback. This is what it's going to be, you know, live with it, you know, figure it out. I'm going to be a quarterback at this level and I'm going to be great. He was obviously at Louisville, comes into the NFL. You know, you had the whole Bill Polian thing, like, he wouldn't work out a wide receiver, that whole thing. And he's like, nope, I'm going to be a quarterback, not going to run the 40, not going to have the traditional agent that you expect me to have, not going to have the quarterback coach that you expect me to have in the process. I'm going to go ahead and do it my way. He's a first-round pick, comes in the NFL, wins the MVP pretty quickly, shows that he's a dynamic player, and then, you know, gets to this crossroads of the Baltimore Ravens where he's like, I am worth this basically max level contract at the quarterback position, despite some of the injuries, despite what, you know, people think is a diminishing returns aspect of my game with the running. And by the way, I can also operate and win games from the pocket. You know, people dismiss that, and yet he signs this massive contract. And then he does the one thing when teams sign guys to these huge deals. You know, one time John Elway, I remember having a conversation with him after they had signed Von Miller to his big deal as a defensive player coming off that Super Bowl and everything. And it was like, the one thing that hangs in the back of your head is, when I signed this deal with this player, am I going to get 90% of what I paid for on the other side of it? Am I going to get 85%? I think it's like that anytime a team signs a quarterback to a max level deal. And yet Lamar Jackson has been 100% and more for the Ravens this season. Only player I can think of realistically who bet on himself at every single turn and said, I'm going to do this. You know, people disagreed. And then on the other side of it, he was able to accomplish what he ultimately thought he could. That's what he's turned into this season as an MVP. Now, you know, the offense has been retooled around him. I get that. Defensive coordinator change, skill positions have really been turned over for him. But I think in that 49ers game, if I'm gonna agree with you that he's MVP, and I have a vote in this process, I'm gonna put it in the hands of a lot of people in the league and ask them to weigh a few different players. But the one thing I saw in that 49ers game that I think is so special, he's able to manipulate a defense into, you know, he just warps them. He gets them out of what makes them comfortable, and we saw that against the 49ers, and that's how, you know, the Ravens are winning a lot of these games right now. It's his ability to not necessarily be that, hey, I'm going to run all over you and, you know, put myself in danger. He runs selectively now. He wins a lot of games from the pocket. Nick Bosa said that going into that game. He's a different player than, you know, what I saw back in, you know, 2019. He wins more games from the pockets. He manipulates defenses. And I think that's what makes the Ravens so incredibly dangerous on offense going into the postseason.
Well, Charles, thanks so much for taking time to join us here on this special week. We got Rex Rhodes' birthday coming up on Sunday. He's very excited about it and glad you could be a part of this week, our celebration.
I'm just glad that we could all catch up to what Joe knows about the sports that we follow. And happy birthday, Joe, in advance of that. And thank you for being patient to let us, you know, really just eventually catch up to you and what you're telling us about the sports landscape. So thank you, Jeff.
No problem. No, I'm here for you. You know, I want you all to, you know, to come along, come around on your own timeline, but I know eventually you'll get there.
Happy 2023, Charles. Boys. I will see you in 2024.
We'll see you in 2024. Right. Thank you, Charles. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports joins us every Thursday morning from 8 to 8:30 here on the program. There's a lot that Charles had to say there. We'll react to that coming up next. Got some of your thoughts to get to as well on the text line, 615-737-1025. All that coming up, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.